If you're ready for it, here comes the Colonel.
Yes, out of cast of thousands running through our studio. Bye, guys. Good riddance. All right. Welcome back to the second half hour of The Promise of Tomorrow here on the Science News Radio Network, the exciting business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. We're going to get back to our interview in just a minute with Harry Arnold, Vice President of Technology at Goodrich Corporation, and he's going to tell us about how they're getting rid of all that heavy wiring on board aircraft, working wireless to make it lighter. I just hope it makes it safer. And also Rick Mahoney, who's the Vice President of Business Development for Innovation Access Network. That's an open innovation network. You're going to find that pretty fascinating. He's going to stop in and tell us all about what's going on there. And, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. But right now, let's step over to our fountain of useless information here, get around the coin jar, and test today's query.
Welcome to the fountain of useless information. How can I help you?
Yes, I see the spirit of the fountain is ready for us. We threw in the coins, and so he's responding. All right, oh spirit of the fountain. Here is today's query. What metamorphic rock became synonymous with chalkboards in the United States in the mid-1800s? A metamorphic rock that became synonymous with chalkboards in the United States in the mid-1800s. This should be an easy one for you, oh spirit of the fountain.
I have given you my answer, and now you
I thought it would be too easy for you. The metamorphic rock that became synonymous with chalkboards in the United States in the mid-1800s? Slate. Of course, the rock is slate.
We are at the forefront of working wireless sensor systems for airplanes, so we can minimize the amount of wiring. Again, there's weight issues, there's maintenance issues, there's reliability issues. So a lot of interesting technologies being developed to power wireless sensor systems on airplanes. We do engine control systems, and we do actuation systems, as I mentioned, both all sorts of actuation systems for airplanes, for both on the primary flight control, secondary flight control, thrust reversers. Real interesting stuff. The world is going from hydraulics to electrical, and the more electric airplane, as Boeing said on the 787, is real, and we see it continuing to become more and more electric airplanes. So we need the talent of the systems people and of the detailed designers to make all of that happen and make it real.
When you were talking about the skin a little while ago, I was wondering if you're going to be using any carbon nanotubes or that sort of thing with the webbing that you spoke of in making things stronger and lighter.
We're doing a lot of work on carbon nanotubes and developing systems that we can use to reduce weight in any number of our products, some of which I guess I don't want to talk about, but we're certainly taking advantage of the technologies associated with carbon nanofibers to, again, go to lightweight and very strong type of structures.
All right. Harry Arnold, Vice President of Technology, Goodrich Corporation, from his office in Charlotte, North Carolina. Thank you so much for being with us today and tipping us off to the great employment opportunities that are open right now with this very dynamic organization called Goodrich Corporation.
All right, thank you.
All right, at this time I want to introduce you to Rick Mahoney. He's Vice President of Business Development for the Innovation Access Network. And we're gonna learn all about that in a minute. It sounds fascinating. He's going to be hosting a business panel on Wednesday, November 16th at the IEEE 2011 International Conference on Homeland Security. Welcome to the program, Rick.
Thanks, Colonel. Glad to be here.
We're real fascinated over the Innovation Access Network. I've heard good things about it, but we don't know much about it. Can you explain to us exactly what this is all about?
Sure. At a high level, the Innovation Access Network, or IAN, is a holistic approach that empowers established and entrepreneurial technology providers from around the globe to securely and efficiently share their innovations and ideas with prime contractors, government agencies, research labs, universities, and other enterprise corporations, with the ultimate goal being the creation of new business collections and collaboration around innovation.
All right, well, this panel, I understand you're going to be joined by Department of Homeland Security Science and Technology person to discuss specifically the role that IAN is going to play for them in heading into 2012. I'd like to know who, if you know the name of that person is going to be with you, and if you don't know the name yet, at least explain to us what we can expect to hear about the role of the Innovation Access Network.
Certainly, yeah. There's one of two individuals that will be joining me. They're working out the logistics right now, but what they're going to be doing in joining me is after we give a high-level overview of what IAN is and the role it can play. Specifically, DHS is engaging in a new initiative that just got signed off on approximately 7 business days ago.
Okay.
And they're going to be leveraging this in two areas to grow this initiative. And really, the end game is to see what's going on out there in the public sector that could help them in their cyber initiatives. And so he's going to expound upon that, the two key pieces of the initiative. And again, it's really exciting because it just recently got signed off on it. So it's something we've been working with them behind the scenes now for about 4 months.
Okay, so you've been trying to hold hands with the Department of Homeland Security now for about 4 months, and it's finally coming to fruition. Now, you gave us sort of a definition of what IAN really does. Why do you think it needs to exist? What's going to be the purpose of this organization?
So, as you look out there today, what you find is just an onslaught of websites, marketplaces that are out there, and while they're great, what happens is most people go out there and they post their innovation, or there's end users that are out there seeking for technology, but there's really no unification, there's no coordination, there's no clearinghouse really at the end of the day to say, okay, if I'm looking for the latest, greatest night vision technology, where do I go? So what IAN is, and the whole purpose that IAN fills, is the fact that now, as a technology seeker, you can go out and post whatever you're looking for. All the while, the innovator community is posting innovations they're working on, and the system works much like a Match.com, making connections between these two parties, pinging them both or emailing both and saying, hey, there's a reason for you two to have a business conversation because I think there's an opportunity that exists here. So now you don't have to worry about not having the bandwidth or the resources to look for this or getting stuck in the same procurement channels. Now you're going to go outside that, and maybe you'll find someone that's two doors down the road that has the next best thing. And so that's really the purpose behind IAN.
So this is going to be just really a more efficient way for people that that have a particular need and people that have a particular product or a gizmo or something to be able to connect with somebody else who may be able to incorporate it and add value to what they're doing and to make it work more successfully. Is that the idea behind it?
That's the basic idea. What we had heard over time is the fact that there's no way to find out where the next new innovation is coming for, and over time you end up dealing with the same people time and time again. So leveraging this system, leveraging this network, what happens behind the scenes is there's an algorithm making these connections. So this whole network is subscription driven, where it's a nonprofit. It's set up for the sole purpose of making these connections to speed up the process of new business opportunities being created and ultimately, hopefully, new jobs being created.
Now, help me with this. Do people want to participate, they go to the website and they register, or are you've got bots roaming around everywhere looking for particular things, or how does this function?
So what we're doing is we are partnering with different associations. We are actively looking at the innovation hotbeds, one of the largest ones being the research labs and the universities across America and really across the globe. Other associations like defense-specific and NDIA or maybe energy-specific, clean energy councils. And so we approach them and say, this is what we're looking to do. Here's a value add to all your constituents. And then they would either agree to cover the cost associated for their constituents, or maybe we'll work out a deal and they would subscribe. And it obviously allows for other people that just happen to come across the Innovation Access Network to subscribe as well. But the end game here is to get as many people, reach a critical mass where you have plenty of seekers posting their technology requests, all the while innovators are posting the innovations they're working on and making connections on a daily basis.
But they've got to be connected to your network for this to work. You're not seeking like through bots or something like that, looking for keywords and that sort of thing.
No. You'd have to be posting through the Innovation Access Network. That's correct.
All right. How do people find this Innovation Access Network, Rick?
So we've entered into a pretty heavy social media campaign. Again, we're leveraging our network here in the New England market. We're working through the consulates for different countries, Israeli, France, the UK, Japan, and Canada right now. And then, again, associations that have a more global appeal, we've had discussions with them as well to get this information downstream to all their members so that they become aware of what IAN is and the value it can have for them.
So this is really a global community, and then what protections are in place to keep, vital tools getting into the wrong hands?
So everything from the website piece is completely secure, 128-bit encrypted, and one of the first things that we tell anyone involved with the network is everything that you're going to post out here is going to be pre-NDA. So what you want to do, especially from an innovator perspective, to protect your IP, is put your best foot forward, talk about successes, you know, what stage of development the project or its thing is, but don't put too much out there at this moment until you've reached that NDA stage, sign that, and then by all means you can exchange the IP.
NDA, non-disclosure agreements, of course, and then what do you do then? You marry the two people together and they go off and make their own deals, or do you help facilitate these deals more closely with them?
When requested, we will be more than happy to help facilitate that, but in most cases, our sole purpose is to create the match, introduce the two parties that otherwise never would have met, and let them take off, because most of the larger companies have a typical process that they want everyone to go through. But to that end, we've also begun, through the network, creating a complete page of business development resources and those companies that would be tied to them. So in the case that, let's say, a marriage or a connection was made, if they want a means to facilitate the exchange of IP, we have resources for that. And if they need guidance from a legal perspective, we have guidance on that. But in a lot of cases, again, many of these companies have their standard process. At that point, they would slate in, sign the NDA, and follow whatever the existing process looks like.
All right. So the procedure would be that I've got a something, and it's past the stage of being just conceptual, but it's really been a proof of concept. And I know that it's going to probably be useful to somebody somehow or other. And so I would get a hold of the Innovation Access Network at your website or some manner or fashion and post what we in this business would call teaser material, not really things that would hurt an NDA, non-disclosure agreement, but would actually allow people to know basically what it does and how it can be helpful and hope that we can find a partner.
That is correct. Yeah, so you'll go out and fill out what your innovation is, and every innovator profiles themselves or their organization, and then within their innovation, they'll profile what they think the suggested uses are. They can put in an abstract and then put in basically define where they are, and then the final piece is to define what stage, and we follow the 9 stages, the standard DoD stages of development. They'll select that, and when they're done, they'll submit, and that will post out to the site for everyone to see that's associated with the Innovation Access Network.
All right, now, who came up with this Innovation Access Network? Is this your brainchild?
Yeah, it was. We have many of our members tied to the council. This is actually a division of the Massachusetts High Technology Council.
Okay.
Many of our core members, in particular the Natick Soldier Systems here in Massachusetts, had approached us about how can we leverage open innovation to find the next big thing or to find the next enhanced thing that's going to address, be it a BAA or something that's important to us. And so we invested about a year and a half in due diligence trying to find a vendor that could help support this, because again, we didn't want to go the standard marketplace route. We wanted something that was going to be robust, that was going to help facilitate connections and really do a lot of the work behind the scenes so that you didn't need that third person or that consultant. And so, lo and behold, we went through that process, and in spring of 2011, earlier this year, we launched the Innovation Access Network.
So you're really sort of been incubated by the Massachusetts Technology Council. Is that correct? And are you working closely with MIT?
We are, actually. What I talked a little bit about earlier was the need to, for the innovation and one of the hotbeds being these universities. And so we've partnered with just about all of the research labs here in Massachusetts, and now we're in detailed discussions with all of the New England universities. Once we get all of them on board, then we will continue building out throughout, you know, the United States, while at the same time having conversations with some universities, in particular in Japan and in the UK.
I noticed one of your talking points you wanted to bring up was putting a face to the IAN, and how do you plan to do that?
So the one thing we don't want this to be is just merely a website. We want, you know, especially when you get into the startups, the entrepreneurs, they're very much about face-to-face networking, making connections in person. And so what we're going to be doing, and really the IEEE event is the very beginning of it, is launching an event calendar as we head into 2012, where there'll be specific IAN-related events that are tied to a topic, that are tied to a particular vertical or industry segment. And we'll be doing that very heavily, very frequently as we head into the new calendar year. And then we're going to be partnering with different incubation areas or groups, and I'll give you an example. There's the Cambridge Innovation Center, where there's some roughly 400 startups or incubators sitting and residing. Many of them, what we're finding, don't want to be seen until they're ready. And so we'll have thought leaders in different specific categories that know about the work they're doing involved in the Innovation Access Network. So if a request comes that maybe not, there's no posting that addressed that, we can ping them and say, okay, do you know anyone that's working in this area? Can we set up a time for those two parties to connect? So we want to really expand this beyond simply being a website. We want the interaction on a regular basis.
And you really don't want to be tied to the Massachusetts Technology Council. You want to be widespread over all areas of the world, I figure. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. We see no boundaries to be here in simply New England or the United States. We see this as having mass appeal across the globe. And based upon some of our discussions with the different consulates I had referenced earlier, we know that that's going to happen fairly quickly. I would say by the end of Q1 in 2012, we'll have clusters in those different countries that I discussed, as well as larger CECO organizations in the fold as well.
Do you come up at Google when you Google IAN, or how does somebody find you easily?
The easiest way is our home portal. We just, as a matter of fact, launched our enhanced portal here about 3 weeks ago. The website is innovationaccess.org, and partnering with Bentley University's world-class usability lab, we took the original existence of IAN, walked it through to make sure it followed the basic rules of usability. We wanted it to be very easy for someone that, without any training, to go in, not only post and search what they need, but get in navigating through the website with ease. And so innovationaccess.org is the website. If you are a innovator, as we call it, which is a startup entrepreneur, or for that matter, an existing organization that's smaller in structure looking to do business with larger organizations, you can go out there, simply sign up, and get right into the system and begin working.
All right, Innovation Access. Innovationaccess.org. You're going to be hosting the business panel on Wednesday, November 16th, at the IEEE 2011 International Conference on Homeland Security Technologies in Boston, Massachusetts. And I want to stress to the listeners that if they want to know how to find out more about that particular conference, go to our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz, and on the right-hand side of the screen, you'll see a link to the IEEE Homeland Security Technologies Conference, which will tell you all about it. And you can register and go listen to Rick Mahoney and the Department of Homeland Security discuss specifically the role that IAN is playing for them as they're heading in to 2012. What have we missed, Rick? What have I neglected to ask you?
I think there's one important piece that has been recently incorporated to the network. You know, we talked about the two real main communities, the seeker community, which are the larger government entities, corporations that are actively seeking for technology, and we talked about the innovators, which you know, are those startups and everyone else. But a key piece to this whole cog, this whole wheel of the network, would be the resource sponsors that we're incorporating now. And I just wanted to touch a little bit more about that. We recently created this whole need based upon conversations we've had with our Ian subscribers to date. Mm-hmm. And what that is a complete list of business development resources that you, in particular the innovator, would need as they take their research to prototype, to something, to a thing that they can sell or license out. And so what you'll find within that community is law firms that have pre-negotiated rates. So if you don't know where to start and you need legal advice, you need financial advice, business travel, media output, we have a whole host of business development resources, as well as what we call our annotated terms project, which is the basic information that you need to know if you're looking to license a technology from a university. So let's assume you're Joe Smith and you don't know anything about how to get started. This will walk you through the basics that you need so you can feel more comfortable approaching a university to extract some of their IP and what the rules and regulations typically are.
Do you have a way of keeping out the lunatics, the lunatic fringe, the ones that have the ideas that are going to turn the world into gray goo, or a vetting process, or what do you do? And not only that, what about the charge? What about the cost of registering with the Innovation Access Network?
Well, what we feel is that the cost is going to be that filter that will help remove some of the goo, or, you know, we're typically calling the bad data that could be in there. Mm-hmm. By assigning a charge, and it's a nominal charge, it's for an innovator, it's $500 for an annual subscription, but through the IEEE event, we are offering half off, so it's $249 for an annual subscription. And we feel that anyone that's looking at this as a business development resource to get seen, it's an easy, cost-justified number. It's just enough to vet out those people that are looking to go to websites and post that gray goo, if you will.
All right. Rick Mahoney, Vice President of Business Development for the Innovation Access Network. That's innovationaccess.org. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. Going to be hosting a business panel on Wednesday, November 16th at the IEEE 2011 International Conference on Homeland Security Technology, and he's going to be joined by members of the Department of Homeland Security discussing specifically the role of IAN and what they're going to be doing in 2012. Stop in and say hello to Rick, and you can register at the website for Homeland Security, which you'll find on the right-hand side of your screen on our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. Thanks for being with us today, Rick. We really appreciate your taking the time to be with us.
I appreciate it. I had a fun time.
And now we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
Whenever we think of the political and the economic and intellectual landscape, we have to add a very, very important dimension to it, which people tend not to do because we are short-sighted and we have short memories. We have to add in the whole historical background, because only then can you understand how it came about, and only then can you have a good idea how the future may be formed. If you forget history, it's very hard to project the future.
This is Dashuan Feng, the Senior Executive Vice President one of the major research universities in Taiwan.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
I am waiting for you.